I'm Brian.
I'm Griff.
And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start and manage and even grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 195. Welcome back to the studio, Brian.
It's great to be back in the studio, Griff. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We always record on Fridays, it seems. That wasn't always the case.
No, we sometimes used to do Thursdays and even Wednesdays. There were times we did some Wednesdays.
And there were some Mondays and Tuesdays.
Do we have a guest this week?
We do. In fact, this is going to be interesting because we have a guest and a caller. And they're both going to join us in a few minutes to talk about a popular topic. Starting a seller meetup group or a meeting group and, in a seller event. But first, is there any eBay news this week?
There is one big news item.
Oh.
Last week, eBay announced the launch of the eBay Vault, a 31,000 square foot, that's big, folks, 24/7, that means 24
yes,
hours,
we
7
know.
Days a week. I wanted to make sure.
We know what 24/7 means, I think.
A 24/7 secured temperature-controlled facility and digital marketplace for collectors. Today, single-graded trading cards that are worth $750 or more are eligible for eBay Vault access.
Yeah, I don't know of any of the marketplace that does this. This is exciting news.
It really is exciting news. And the pictures of the vault are just incredible.
Are those the actual thing? Is that the vault, the pictures?
Yeah, and I don't know that we've publicly showed them, but internally we saw those
pictures of the vaults. Well, it's on the eBay Inc. blog. There's a photo, and it looks like something inside a spaceship.
Yes, it is super, super cool. It also provides sellers a way to engage in partial ownership of the card through fractionalization.
Okay, I got to ask, what does that mean, fractionalization?
Well, didn't you take math classes in grade school?
I know what fractions are.
Fractions.
Yeah, denominators, numerators.
So, but it's an interesting concept, really, when you think about it for a card. It means buyers can purchase a piece of a trading card in the vault, but not the entire card. So it almost comes like an investment opportunity.
Oh, it's like buying shares in a company like eBay.
Yes. It's a way for the buyer to invest in cards that may be out of their price range if they were trying to buy the entire card.
Ah, I get it. Like a card that's worth $1,000 and hey, I don't have $1,000, but I can put $100 in.
Yes.
How can I tell if a card listing on eBay is, so to speak, in the vault, quotation marks?
So you can easily identify cards that are already stored in the vault via the vault badge in the listing.
Oh, there's a badge.
Yep, definitely a badge. We do badges a lot, it seems.
Well, I think a lot of sites do. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this one's an important badge. So if a buyer finds an eligible card that is not currently showing that it is in the vault, that is no vault badge, the buyer will have the ability to add the card to the vault when completing their purchase.
Oh.
If they choose to do so, of course.
Of course. Which begs the question, how does a trading card, Brian, how does it qualify for inclusion in the vault? Sounds like an exclusive club.
Yes. And as I mentioned at the beginning, card's eligible for vault if it sells for at least $750.
Okay.
It also has to be purchased directly on eBay.com.
All right.
And be graded by a top grader in the category by recognized graders like Professional Sports Authenticator, PSA, Sports Card Guarantee Corporation, SGC, and a few others.
Okay, so let's go through this because I think I'm understanding it, but I need a step-by-step.
I thought you might ask that.
I tend to.
When a service-eligible purchase is made, so a card is eligible for the vault, the buyer instantly becomes the owner once the card passes authentication. And they can choose to keep their card stored in the eBay vault, or they can take it out or withdraw it.
So withdrawal means shipping the card directly to me, the buyer.
Yes, if the buyer opts to have the card shipped.
Okay.
But a buyer of a vault qualifying card may also opt to forgo shipment and instead choose to have it stored in the vault. In that case, card ownership transfers from the seller to the buyer in a matter of seconds. And there's no need for re-authentication because we've already authenticated it to put it in the vault, right?
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And there's no shipping costs. We don't need to ship the item anywhere. So there's no time limit for storing in the eBay vault as it's designed for long-term secure storage.
So there's no like monthly fee, like if I put all my things in a storage unit, you know?
No storage fee though.
Good.
But there is one thing.
Okay.
So cards that are destined for the eBay vault are required to go through authenticity guarantee at no cost.
No cost?
No cost.
Yikes.
I know. Doesn't sound like eBay, does it?
I was thinking the same thing, and I'm sure sellers were too. Go on.
So if a buyer opts to send their purchase to the eBay vault, the seller will first ship the card to be inspected by independent authentication experts.
Oh, this is excellent. I know that authentication usually involves fees, so it's nice to know that there are no fees for authentication when you're using the vault.
Correct.
But say I choose to have a vault card sent directly to me. How will that work?
Well, that's called the withdrawal. And for withdrawal, the company's dedicated eBay vault team will meticulously package the card and ship it to the buyer via track shipping.
Oh, am I going to get a nice little package with the card inside?
You will.
Oh, that's so sweet. I guess the vault team thought of everything, Brian. This sounds like a great service for collectors and traders of high-value trading cards, but it begs the question, what about other categories?
Well, there's good news there, too. By 2023, the eBay vault will expand to include additional collectibles categories and luxury goods.
Mm.
And within a few years, the eBay vault is expected to hold up to $3 billion in assets, making it one of the largest stores of non-government assets in the world.
It's like eBay's Fort Knox.
Exactly. It's right next to the studio, just for our listeners to know.
No, No. It's in a very secret location.
It is. Yeah. You can read more about the launch of the eBay Vault on the eBay Inc. blog at eBay Inc.
Hey, before we continue, we should let our listener know that you're going to be off for a few weeks.
I'm going to be off for 2 weeks, starting on Tuesday.
Really? So we won't have you on the podcast, yes. Unfortunately. Where are you going?
So I'm going to Ireland to a college friend's wedding, and then another college friend is going. He and I are going to play some golf and then work our way towards the southern part of Ireland where I have family. My grandfather's from Cork, and I'm going to spend some time, 5-6 days down that part of the island. And for the first time in my life, I am going to stay at the farm where my grandfather was born.
Cool.
In the past, I visited it, but it's always been day visits because it was a working farm. And, yeah. You know, there's not a lot of room for Americans coming over with their families
to
stay.
Are you going to work on the farm while you're there?
Well, what they've done is, my cousin has taken the dairy. It was a small, very, very small dairy farm. You can imagine it's a subsistence farm from the 1800s, right? But he's taken the milking barn and he's converted it into like a small cottage that they can now rent out.
So you're renting the cottage.
Well, he hasn't said he's going to charge me, but I'm going to at least bring him a bottle of whiskey.
He'll charge you. I guarantee it. Hey, you know the coincidence. You know you're there for a special day, June 16th. You know what June 16th in Ireland is?
So it's Bloomsday.
It's Bloomsday. Exactly. If you're in Dublin, you can take part in the festivities.
And I will be in Dublin because I land on the 15th. And so that'll be my second day in Dublin.
So you can follow the path that Leopold Bloom took on June 16th, I believe it was 1908, in the book Ulysses.
James Joyce.
By James Joyce. And I've always wanted to go to Bloomsday. So I think,
even if I don't do it, I'm sure others will be walking the course. And I'll take some pictures and I can send them to you.
I know it's a vacation, but I'm tempted to give you a recorder and say, capture some content. Go to the Dublin eBay office. And we still have an office in
Dublin.
We
do. And I work closely with a couple of our colleagues from our Dublin office because they run the community in, you know, for the UK.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping either Wednesday evening or Thursday afternoon, I'm going to get a chance to pop into the office.
Oh, great. Well, we'll ask you when you get back how your vacation went and how your visit to the office went.
I will miss our listeners.
Well, Brian, thanks so much. Hey, stick around. We're going to talk with our special guest in a moment. Hey, Brian, I received an email last week from eBay seller Lori, who enjoyed our recent segment on seller-managed events, aka meetups. She has a lot of questions on how to get one started, and I thought, instead of you and I providing the answers, why not have a real expert on to answer them? Our guest expert today began selling on eBay in 1999. She founded the original eBay sellers group. It's called the Dallas eBabes and Emails. She did that in 2002. And in 2013, she wrote the Meetup Organizer Step-by-Step Success Guide, which I have a copy and I can confirm it's got a lot of great information in it. Please welcome our guest expert on seller-managed events, Stephanie Inge.
Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you very much.
Stephanie, we brought eBay seller along today who has questions about starting a meetup. I'd like you to meet our seller, eBay seller, Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Hey, Lori. Nice to meet you. I'm Stephanie.
Nice to meet you as well, Stephanie. Thanks for coming on.
It's my pleasure. I'm anxious to learn more about you and what you're wanting to do.
Great. I have a lot of questions for you.
Good. I'm all ears.
Okay. My first question is basically where to have it. Of course, because I'm just starting this, I don't know how many people I will have, how many people will want to come, what kind of a place. Do I go to a coffee shop, a restaurant? I just don't even know where to start.
That's a typical dilemma that we've all encountered. And so the best thing to do, in my opinion, is to do a search on Meetup for the city that you live in or the area in which you live and find out where those groups are meeting. And it will also tell you how many members they have. Now, granted, they may have thousands of members, but that doesn't mean all of them show up to each meetup. That might give you an idea of some places that can actually host a group. Now, regarding the number of people to expect, there's not really any way of knowing. However, one of the perks of having an actual meetup group is your members can RSVP. As soon as they RSVP, you'll receive an email, so you'll always know what the headcount is going to be. So let's say you decided to start out at a coffee shop and the coffee shop only has room for 10 of you. You can cap it out at 10 and then you can allow people to get on a wait list. So if someone doesn't show up, then they will automatically be added back in. That would be a great way to start. If you're at a restaurant, which is, you know, a very popular place for meetups, I would recommend an off day. And what I mean by off day would be like a Monday night. I would guess that that would be the slowest night of the week. You surely wouldn't want to have it on the weekends. And usually they will welcome your business on a slow night or a slow day. That would make it a lot easier on you as an organizer to find a venue. That's how I started. And we started out at a restaurant. And after like a couple of months of meeting, we outgrew that. So we moved to another place. It was a slow process. And we started out our first meeting with maybe 12 to 15 people. And word of mouth grew. There was no social media back then. I used eBay discussion groups. That was my social media. Some libraries actually have a meeting room. But typically, if you're going to have it at night, people want to have a meal and maybe dinner. Then you have to plan for traffic. So depending on what time you want to have your meetup, you need to make sure it's conducive where people can get there, you know, by the start time.
Stephanie, when you started your group, how many people did you start off with?
Our first meeting, I think we actually had 15 people and we met at a local Chili's.
Yeah,
that's a lot for an initial meetup.
It really is. And now after COVID, we've just had our second meetup. And at first, I was afraid no one would show up. I think people are so anxious to reconnect. The last two meetings, we've had like a packed room both times. And so it was really nice to see, you know, people's faces other than on a Zoom call.
Hey, Lori, are you thinking of places right now that might be possible locations for you to start having people in for a seller meeting?
Yeah, I was thinking of, there's a restaurant right above the freeway that's in my city, and it's a bar restaurant, and it doesn't really seem like it ever gets that busy. I was thinking maybe going up there and talking to someone and seeing if that's something I could do and what would be a best night.
You mentioned, do you meet in a coffee shop or whatever? And I think it really depends on what type of a group that you want to form. One of the things that we've done on the eBay platform is there's a seller events link off community.com, and there's no cost for you to start a group through that channel. You can make it as big or as small as you want.
What's a good time, do you think, to start? I know people work during the day, so I also know that they want to get home at night, so I wanted to find a good meeting time. And about how long should it go?
Mine always start, or they used to start, at 6, and we would go till about 8:30. But the traffic is so bad, we live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so yeah. 6 o'clock is very hard for people to get there, especially if they work a 9-to-5 job. Since we just restarted our in-person meetings, now we meet from 7 to 9, which is much more realistic for them to get there on time. When you get a bunch of eBay sellers together, they don't want to leave. So we usually don't get out of there until about 9:30. And sometimes I have to just cut it off because they can stay there and talk all night. I think 7 to 9 is a great time. And we've always, since day one, have always met on a Monday night. The only exceptions are if we have eBay come to town and they can't do a Monday night, we will do whatever we have to accommodate them because, you know, they bring in a large crowd and they're celebrities. And, I mean, and people want to connect with them. So we do what we have to in certain situations, but it's always been on a Monday. And I think that that would probably work for you also, especially the little bar that you're talking about, as long as it's not too noisy.
And how long out from now should I schedule? I was wondering, should I wait a month? What do you think is a good amount of time?
I do mine usually about 3 weeks ahead. Unless I already have a guest speaker lined up, then I'll go ahead and get it scheduled. It doesn't always have to be a speaker. In the beginning, we never had speakers for the first year and a half. It was just coffee talk, you know, among friends. It was just a get together. But once you get it scheduled, advertise it on your social media platforms and create like a mirror Facebook group for your meetup. So if you call it Lori's eBay group, create a Facebook group that's called that too, where people can ask questions and chit chat and carry on the conversation that they started at the actual meetup.
That's a great idea.
And Lori, the other thing about scheduling out, there are a lot of folks who will schedule the third Tuesday of the month. With all of the platforms, whether it's the seller meetings platform on eBay or Meetup, you can schedule out in advance. So if you know you're going to meet, let's say, the third Monday of every month, you could schedule three out.
Consistency, having that same exact date, people, if they get invited somewhere and they say, oh no, that's my eBay meetup night. Mm. So they know in advance. So that's a really good point.
If you're starting off, you should probably keep it a little open and flexible because you won't know, right? Exactly what night and how many times a month or what the cadence is that's going to work for your crowd.
I think that's a good point that maybe for now, just say once a month and then I can tweak it as I go.
And pick a day of the week that works best for everybody.
Okay. My next question was an agenda. I see that they want an agenda on my dashboard. And how do I go about figuring that out exactly? How did you structure your first one?
I just keep it very simple. I do 2 hours. And it runs longer. The last 30 minutes is just, you know, chit chat. So the first hour, I call it networking and dinner. So if you meet at a bar, that gives everybody an hour to chit chat. And then the speaker usually comes on, whether that's just y'all discussing a topic or an actual speaker. It's usually from 7 to 8. And if there's Q&A, we'll ask the speaker if they mind in a little while to answer the questions, but sometimes you have to cut that off too because you want to be respectful of your speaker's time because, like I said, they can go on for hours asking questions.
And they do. So, I can guarantee you they do.
Right. So the agenda for me is very simple, just dinner and networking and then your discussion topic at 8 or, you know, depending on what your hours are, the first hour for eating and talking, the second hour for discussion, whatever that may be.
I should mention here that eBay actually has, as Brian has alluded to before, a platform for sellers who want to start a meetup group. It's called Seller Meetings and Seller Events, where there's no cost.
And I think, Lori, we set you up with an account, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
I think that would be your best bet.
Stephanie, you were talking about naming your group and you used an example. Wouldn't it be wise for someone like Lori or any seller who's starting a seller meetup to have in their name of their group the location?
The city. Absolutely. Yeah. It really does.
So for Lori, it would be Inland Empire, for example.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of putting for my chapter.
Lori, do you have more questions?
I do. I also saw that you can order supplies. What are these supplies and what are they for?
So yes, in the old days, we would drag the supplies with us as we'd go to Dallas and hand Steph some eBay logoed items. Now there's that URL that you can use to, if you know you're going to have a meetup and you want me to send you stuff, and I don't actually do the packing, we have somebody who does it. He will send you a number of items that you can raffle off. Like a lot of meetup organizers, what they'll do at the end of the meeting is they'll have a raffle. and give out 3 to 4 items for people who attend. And so you can get some eBay branded merchandise from us.
With my eBay for business podcast mug that you guys sent.
Well, yes, we can always get you more if you want to raffle them off. So,
but Lori, what we did during COVID, actually, because there's the opportunity to do virtual events, we've also, like, instead of sending it to the host and having them then have to repack it and send it out, we've also given the leaders the opportunity, if they do a virtual one, send us 3 names and we'll just send them directly to the sellers.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question, Stephanie?
You sure can.
So now that you're starting back up with actual physical on-location meetings, are there any challenges that you're facing after these last 2 years of just doing them virtual? I mean, are people gotten used to that and maybe they don't? I know you said people are itching to get out, but is everyone itching?
Not everybody.
Yeah.
Not every. There's still some people that are all holed up, you know, in their house. I don't think there's anything we're going to be able to do to really change that. So I still create a Zoom. In fact, I have them pre-scheduled for the rest of the year for, you know, the fourth Monday of each month, to where other people can still join us live if they want to. And so we're doing a hybrid event. Our guest speaker this past month, Mark Levine in Chicago. And of course, Rich joins us every month, even though he's in Chicago. I love having him because he makes me laugh so much. He had some really good questions, even though he's right there. Mark's part of his group. It was about the new postal changes that will be rolling out in July. And Mark is such a whiz when it comes to that. Our heads were just like ready to explode. But anyway, we have a lot of people that still join us virtually. I am trying to accommodate both the people in their house and the people that want to get out of their house.
So at some point, Lori may want to consider that. It's probably not enough time to go in the details here, the technical end of it, but it's not impossible to do.
Very easily in the platform. You can either use the Bevy Virtual or drop a Zoom link into it, and you can use Zoom. The only thing is, I know Steph's very comfortable with having the Zoom and also having with people come from other areas into her meetup. There are some meetup organizers who really like it to be local. And I think, Lori, you have to decide, like, what's the model that you want for your particular group?
Where would I get a speaker if I wanted a speaker? How would I look into that?
What I recommend is to go to eBay into subscriptions. And all the third-party vendors that are part of eBay or support eBay or integrated with eBay, they love spreading the word about their service or their product to eBay sellers. And so they're usually eager to do like a virtual presentation. If you have a very large group, a lot of times they will pay their own way to speak to your group. But when you're first starting out, you can invite them to maybe do a virtual presentation. Some of the people, just to give you an idea of who have done virtual presentations, are Liz Perfectly, again, Mark Levine, he's with Bubble Fast, and Sellhound, Stamps.com. You might start out by inviting somebody from your local post office that could explain all the changes, because that's going to be here before we know it. And if you're meeting with eBay sellers, they're all going to have questions. And I think that will be a very relevant topic and an easy way to get started.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Another source to think about as well is professionals that you work with. So whether it's someone who's a tax person who could come in and talk about things like taxes and things like that. But then also, as the group grows, you'll find that you're going to have some experts within the group. I know that the San Jose group has leveraged members of the group to do topics on how to best package an item and, you know, actually demo it. As your group grows, you'll find that somebody's an expert in, let's say, inventory management, and somebody else is an expert in identifying the best shipping rates, and you can leverage those skill sets.
And another thing about that idea, which is awesome, is it gives them their 15 minutes in the spotlight. And that's really what the group is. It's not just your group. I like to remind everybody it's their group. I just like run it. And so I want everybody to shine and be able to share their expertise. If you put it to them that way, Some people are afraid to get up there, believe it or not, but others jump at the chance. So I totally agree with Brian. And after the first couple meetings, you'll know who those people are.
Yeah, you will. You'll know them very well.
Okay, my last question is kind of a catch-all. Is there anything else that I need to know? And do you have any do's, don'ts, tips, tricks for me?
After a few meetings and finding out like who shows up and who is like dedicated to the group, you may start thinking about just getting an assistant organizer. They can help you find venues, because after a while, it's not work. To me, it's always been a labor of love. But there will be things that you need help with, whether it's carrying in a projector and door prizes or the name tags or just running Office Depot to get those. It's nice to have an assistant. And if you ever got sick and couldn't make the meeting, they could step in for you. So that's one thing just to think about in the near future. And another thing is I started my meetings for free. They've always been free until 2 months ago. And I didn't want to make this a profit center. I'm charging $3, and that includes all they can eat pizza and drinks. You can't even go to McDonald's for that. But the main reason is to help me offset some of my costs, but mainly because I have found that when I charge them, when they RSVP, they actually show up.
Yes.
Before, everybody was RSVPing, and I would have like 60, 70 RSVPs and 25 people show up. I think it's rude to do that. But when they spend a measly $3, they show up to eat all the pizza they eat. And
yeah, so, they got skin in the game.
Yeah, they have skin in the game. Yeah. So it's a lot easier to start the $3 or $5 in the beginning rather than let them do that for 20 years and all of a sudden charging something. So I would start out with just a very minimal amount just to help you. You might want to buy your own door prizes or a birthday cake or gifts for your guest speakers when they do come. So just little incidental things like that. And those are the only two things that I can think of right off the top of my head.
Stephanie wrote a really good guide, which is still available online. You can buy it. It's called the Meetup Organizer Step-by-Step Success Guide. And I have a copy of it. And it's really good. It's not a hard read. It's a very slim book, but it's really chock full of information for people like you, Lori, who are thinking about starting off.
Will you put that link in the...
I certainly will. I'll ask Stephanie to provide the link she prefers, whether it's eBay or some other site. But yeah, we'll do that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate all of the help, you guys. I think I'm definitely ready to go and get my meetup live.
Great.
Okay.
I think you are too.
I'm anxious to see how well you do and follow your meetup journey.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. We'll keep an eye on Lori's meetup journey and we'll report back to her, or she'll report back to us over time, and we'll see how it's going. And again, if you're out there thinking about starting a meetup group or a seller meeting, as we call them at eBay, please give the platform a try. Go to community.ebay.com. There's an event link right up in the right-hand corner, and you can start setting up your seller events for nothing. It's a really good platform as well. But if you like seller meetups, if you like using meetup.com, hey, whatever it takes, all we're concerned about is that you get together, have a good time, and learn some stuff. I want to thank you both for coming by and talking with us. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you. Y'all have a great weekend.
Lori, thanks again for asking those questions. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate all the help today.
Our guest seller expert today started selling on eBay in 1999. Stephanie founded the original eBay sellers group way back in 2002. That's ancient history to some of us. It's called the Dallas eBabes and Emails Group. Check it out. And she also wrote the Meetup Organizer Step-by-Step Success Guide.
You got questions?
We got answers. On our first question, Brian, this week was sent, believe it or not, as an audio file attachment in an email to podcast@ebay.com.
Wow. So not like a voicemail over the recording, but audio. They recorded it and sent it to you.
Yeah. And you'll hear it in a minute. I actually like this way of doing this because it's better quality than the voice line.
So that's great.
So if more sellers did this, maybe we'd get rid of the voice line.
So big thanks to Diana.
Yeah, so that's our eBay seller, Diana. Let's listen to what she had to say.
Hi, Griff. Diana here from the UK. It was really good to hear from Paren about the buyer group's new segmentation tool, and even greater to hear that sellers will be able to create segments by choosing store categories instead of eBay categories. I'm very looking forward for that new release. Any idea when the release will happen for this change? If it's all right, I would like to leave another suggestion as well for the buyer group's tool. It would be great if sellers would be able to target past buyers that were one-time buyers and or repeated buyers, obviously within a specific time frame. I truly believe that this new update would be so relevant for this tool. Targeting can be done in such a more efficient way. Well, thanks for your time. Thanks for listening to my queries. And have a good one. Thank you. Bye.
That's a couple of really good suggestions.
It is. You remember that Perrin was on our show a couple of episodes ago and talked about buyer groups, and that's what Diana's talking about. The minute I got this, I actually sent it off to Perrin so I could get some input from his team. Of course, what do you think the answer is about announcing anything?
Well, we probably can't, and he probably can't.
Right. So, Diana, sorry, but there's no announced date for the next release of any buyer groups enhancements, although the most I could tell you is probably look for the end of this year and into 2023, since their priority list has got a lot of stuff on it. I love that suggestion.
About the repeat buyers.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need more connections with past buyers so we can grab them back in.
Right. And if we're giving the sellers tools to be able to communicate with them, then we should make sure that we're giving them their past buyers.
That's something that I highlighted in my email to Perrin. Diana has a great suggestion. I hope you guys will consider it. He agreed. He said it's a great suggestion. Good. And they're going to consider it.
That team's done some exciting stuff recently, and they seem like a customer-focused group.
Yes, they seem like a customer-focused group.
Good suggestions. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Diana. Yes.
Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Angela, who writes, "Hi, Podcast Gang. Love the podcast and especially like the ones that deal with shipping. I was listening to episode 139 when you talked about creating shipping policies, and I wondered why a seller would add more than one shipping service to a policy. Hmm. How does that work when the buyer sees the listing? Could you help explain this to me? Thanks, Angela."
She didn't leave a user ID, but Angela, you know, this got me thinking. Because when you set up a policy, you probably know this, you can add up three services in one policy, right? And some sellers do this, and I've done it in the past, and I notice I have some policies that have three services, but I haven't been using them. I thought about this question, and I thought there may be a really good reason, besides just giving the choice to the buyer of different services, but there may actually be a cost reason here for yourself and for the buyer, if you're charging for shipping, which I do now. I know as a proponent of free shipping for years, and I still use it for certain items, but now I just charge for shipping. But it's calculated, and I pass the discounted rates on. And I thought about this, Angela, and I think the best reason to be able to add different services is because you may find that depending on where you're located and where your buyer is located, that the service that you would normally use may be a little bit more expensive than another service. So, for example, I've been finding that USPS and UPS rates are pretty disparate in some cases. For some buyers that are located closer to me, it might make sense to use USPS First Class, for example. But for other buyers, it actually may be cheaper to use another service like UPS Ground. I've been offering just the one service, but I think now I'm going to do a little experiment. I'm going to use that eBay shipping calculator that we talk about, and we'll put the link again in this episode's transcript. I'm going to use some hypotheticals, like I'm in the West Coast. Here's an item. It weighs this much. There's the zip code. I usually use my Vermont house zip code.
Yep.
That's pretty far away. Yeah. And now I want to see what the different services are going to charge for this 1 or 2 pound package. And this will give me better insight into why I may want to offer two different services. And the reason being is because for stuff close to me, it may be cheaper to use one service,
right?
But it may be cheaper for the buyer to use a second.
And my understanding too, if you're using calculated shipping, eBay will then take automatically those two services, and we will only show the buyer, based on their location, the cheapest of the two.
Right. So they don't have to do a lot of work. If they click on the shipping and payments tab, they'll see all one, two, or three services with the different rates. But in the listing and on the search results, if you charge for shipping, we'll show that cheapest shipping cost.
The only other time that I've seen sellers aggressively use the option is during like holidays when they want to offer an expedited service that is much more expensive.
Yeah.
They at least give the buyer the option to have an expedited service.
Right. So if you have two services that are just competing on price and time isn't an issue. Although I got to tell you, so I don't get paid by UPS or any of the carriers to promote one over the other, but I've been using this year for the first time UPS almost exclusively for anything a pound or over. I'm still using USPS for most of my first class.
Yeah.
And my items are getting there as fast, in some cases, as if they had shipped priority.
Interesting.
And it's usually $8 to $11. If it's 2 pounds, it may be a little bit more. But I'm going to do this experiment, Angela, and I urge all sellers to do this and figure out, based on your location, what are some of the differences in the different costs, and can that help get your item sold because you're offering a competitive cost?
And remember also, like, the carriers themselves throughout the year will make adjustments to their pricing and their service levels and things like that. So it's one of those things that probably it's good to experiment with once in a while, especially after they've made an announced change.
Starting this weekend, when I have time, I'm going to create a few new business policies that have a selection of services, add them to a group of listings as a A-B test, and see how they perform. And I'll get back to you in a few weeks or a month and tell you what the results are. So I urge you, Angela, I urge all sellers to consider shipping policies that have at least two, maybe three services to see if that helps get your item competitive when it comes to shipping costs.
Okay.
Our next email came from eBay seller Paul, who wrote to podcast@ebay.com with the next question for this week. He says, "Hi, Brian and Griff. Love to hear your podcast. My user ID is IsomStore. I'm having a lot of sales, but to new customers on eBay. I see that many of them have opened an account the same month of making a purchase." And this makes him a little leery. He says, "How can I be sure that their payments will be legit? Thanks, Paul." Brian, I'm going to let you take this.
New buyers are, their money is just as good as experienced buyers.
Exactly.
And, you know, oftentimes new buyers are the ones that are really looking for an item. And the nice thing with immediate pay, if you leverage immediate pay, obviously if you're doing an auction, you know, there's some risk that maybe they don't pay, but that's a very small percentage of all of auction transactions. And you can reduce the likelihood of any problem using immediate pay, but just know that the vast, vast majority of our brand new buyers are just like you. They want to pay for the item because they actually want it.
As you've probably figured out, Paul, you don't ship the item until you've been paid.
Right.
And through eBay's payments service, which has been in place now for a few years, once they submit the money to you, that money is yours. Well, it goes through eBay and then eBay pays it out to your account. And once that happens, it's done. You've got the money. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about that, I don't think.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Brian, you'll find the next one to be really interesting. So I'm going to let you have it. It's from eBay seller TJ. He emailed podcast@ebay.com with a question. Why don't you read it?
"Hi, guys. Any reason why sellers can't leave feedback for buyers that haven't paid, and why it is only positive feedback when we are able to leave feedback? I think it should be allowed so other sellers can be aware if it is a non-paying or bad buyer. Thank you. And I would really love a mug, please. Store name, TJ Buys and Sells, TJ Hassan." Well, thank you, TJ, for the question. Just by asking the question, you're disqualified from receiving a mug. No, I'm kidding. I am kidding.
TJ, you're asking a question about an issue that was actually settled back in 2008, not without some consternation, but I thought I'd leave it to Brian to explain.
So a couple of things. First off, on unpaid item, if a buyer doesn't pay for an item, there's a mechanism for you to use unpaid item, and we want you to file that the buyer has not paid. Because two things happen. One is we actually send a reminder to the buyer that, hey, you haven't paid. And the nice thing with unpaid item now is you can set it up automatically. If the buyer hasn't paid by a certain number of days, boom, out goes that message. And that tends to get buyers to pay. And if they don't, within a couple of days after that, you can then close that case and relist your item and just move on. The buyer then kind of gets a strike. We have information that the buyer didn't pay for the item. If that happens too frequently, we take action against the buyer.
Right.
A public negative in that scenario doesn't really do anything, because you can imagine a seller can't look at a potential buyer's feedback. The other reason we don't allow sellers to leave negatives for buyers is we saw sellers using negative feedback in a way that compounded bad experiences for buyers. And we saw a big shift between 2001 and 2007 of sellers holding back leaving feedback until they found out what kind of feedback the buyer left. And then once the buyer left, oftentimes a negative or a neutral, the seller, whether they had done the right thing or not, would leave a negative feedback for the buyer. And at that time, we had something called mutual feedback withdrawal, which allowed both parties, if both parties agreed to remove a feedback, then feedback was removed. And what we saw was basically buyer has a bad experience. They don't get the item, or the item's not as described. They leave an appropriate negative. The seller then leaves a negative for the buyer. Buyers were churning because of that.
Brian means, and I don't mean to interrupt, but this was a shocking thing in 2007 when we saw it, is that buyers were leaving eBay in droves because of this. When we would reach out and ask them, they would say, because I got a negative, I'm a buyer, I'm a shopper, I shouldn't get negatives.
I paid for the item.
Yeah. So we stopped it, and it's not coming back. Feedback has always been primarily a way for a buyer to judge a seller, not the other way around. So I hope that answers your question.
And I do understand the unpaid item. There's a good mechanism for that.
But that's going away. Unpaid item.
Right. As we do more and more immediate pay, even with auctions, it should go away.
Yeah.
There still is a report a buyer feature. So if there's some other thing that a buyer has done, you can use the report a buyer feature, and we'll take that information in.
Yeah.
It's a valid question. When you look at the system overall, you would expect kind of a balanced system, and it's not, and it's intentionally not.
So I hope that answers your question, TJ, and continued success on eBay. Thanks everyone who sent in a question for this week's podcast. Your questions are the backbone of our little endeavor here, so we really appreciate them.
We do. Do you have a question about running a business on eBay? Why not call it in to us at 888-723-4630.
888-723-4630. Call that number at your convenience and leave your question or comment for us to answer. And make sure you leave your shipping address so we can send you a mug.
If you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. And you can include an audio file if you prefer. Just like Diana did.
Yes, we love audio files included to attachments. They're really high quality. Now it's time for your weekly 3-point podcast checklist.
So I'm going to add one to this one.
Knock yourself out.
So don't forget to check your inventory. I had the experience this week of having listed an item. I looked back. It was almost 2 years ago.
Oh, no.
And it was an Xbox game.
Oh, no.
And we had since painted the inside of the house.
And you lost
and
it.
And I went and I saw like 4 of the 8 Xbox games. I ended up having to take 4 more. But somebody did not get Family Guy Back to the Multiverse, and it sold for $32. So like I was...
It was a Family Guy game?
Yes.
And Brian. I'm so disappointed in you, Brian.
I never played it, but I spent 3 days looking for it. So you know what I did?
What?
I bought another item on eBay and had it shipped to him
directly. Oh, I've done that. Yeah.
And then I refunded his money because I was late on shipping. So I got a ding for late shipment, but at least he's got the item.
Let's make it clear that employees are not indemnified against dings.
Correct. Yes. If I get too many of those. Well, that's the first time that has ever happened to me, though.
Well, it happens to everyone, so welcome to the club.
I know, but what it made me realize is like the long tail stagnant inventory.
You got to check
stuff
it.
That you got to check. So that's my, so I kind of usurped at the first.
Well, that's right. You gave me an opportunity to do my Stewie impersonation.
Yes. So back to number one.
Yeah.
Check the announcement board every day for up-to-date seller news.
Yeah. And give your buyers and yourself a possible break on shipping and shipping costs, and explore having more than one service option for your listings.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, Stephanie Inge of Stephan, Texas, and founder of the eBabes and Emails Texas Meetup Group and eBay Seller Lori.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.